Today is Wednesday, November the 1st. This is the Women's Chumash year. We're up to Bereshit, Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Dalet. Okay, Rabotai. Okay, Rabotai. I'd like to dedicate this year on behalf of a refuah shleima for a young boy in Medinat Yisrael who I happen to know, who's needs a refuah shleima. So let us learn on behalf of Ilan, and. Okay, we are up to Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Dalet. Tetvav Dalet. What's happening here is, after the completion of the war, which Avram participated in to redeem from captivity his nephew Lot, he succeeded in defeating four powerful kings, who wanted to reward him subsequently, and he refused to accept any reward. There were some remaining fear that Avraham might have been concerned with, namely reprisal, retaliation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Anochi Magen Lach, I'm going to protect you, there's nothing to worry about. Plus, I assure you that you have not used up all of your good merits to preclude me from rewarding you in accordance with the promises that I made even before you engage in that battle. As is the case with all of the Avot, every time something miraculous happened to them, and this certainly was miraculous protection, because under normal circumstances, four powerful kings should certainly defeat 319 people, Avram and 318 others, who were far from trained soldiers. Nonetheless, he emerged victorious. He thought he used up his own zichuyot. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Schar'cha habeh me'od, don't worry about it. Avram says, there is nothing that means anything to me because I don't have anyone to inherit. And if I have no one to inherit my estate, what good is it going to do me that you're going to bestow me with enormous wealth? Who cares? After all, the only one available is Ben Beiti Hu Damesek Eliezer. That is this individual who I acquired in Damascus, and his name is Eliezer, but he is my servant. He's not my flesh and blood. So what could I how can I possibly enjoy anything that you might give to me? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu immediately responds to Avram. This is where we're up to. Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Dalet. Vihine Divar Hashem Elav Lemor. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's as if Avram didn't even get the last words out of his mouth, which are recorded in Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Avram, I'm reading Gimel. Hein li lo natata zara. You have not given me any child. Vihine ben beiti yoreshoti. Or the person of my household, my servant, is going to inherit me. He could barely get the words out of his mouth, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds immediately. How do I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded? So take a look, and that's what the Ramban says, is the unusual introduction to God's words. Take the sheet, the first sheet, I bracketed the Ramban in the middle of the page, Vihinei divar Hashem elav lemor. a most unusual way of saying Vayomer Hashem. That's what it would normally say. Vayomer Hashem. But Vayomer Hashem can mean whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to speak to him. Why does it use this most irregular expression? V'hine divar Hashem elav lemor, says the Ramban, ba'avur heyot lo habein hayoresh achar ziknato. He's first explaining what God said. I'll translate that a little later. Look at the third line of the Ramban. Vitam hine devar Hashem elav ki od bifiv vihine ben beiti yoresh oti. The words were still coming out of Avram's mouth. Who is going to inherit me? My servant uba elav pitom. Mazet pitom? Suddenly. Suddenly God comes. Devar Hashem lemor. Lo yirashcha zeh. That person, Eliezer, is not going to inherit you. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so quick to allay Avram's fears that he barely gives him a chance to articulate and finish his final sentence. Like many students do. They don't give the teacher half a second to finish his thought, or her thought. But that's... And then, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Lo yirashcha zeh. This person will not inherit you. Ki im, alternatively, who will? Asher yetze mimeecha. Somebody who will come from your loins. Hu yirashcha. He will inherit you. He will inherit you. Literally, me'ayim is a stomach. Chole me'ayim means you have a stomach ache. And what he's really saying here is you might have lots of children, but I'm assuring you that not only is it going to come from you, but who else? Your wife. And the way biblically Hebrew, the way they indicate that somebody is having a baby, they talk about what? That the baby is yotze mimeav, from her stomach. Meav means, so the baby is not coming out of Avram. I can trust me, I can almost say that with a measure of certainty. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will guarantee him that he has nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about. And another thing, says the Ramban. Now I go back to the first three lines. Avram is concerned on two levels. Number one, he doesn't have a child yet at all. Number two, if I do have a child in the somewhat near or distant future, by the time he's born, I'm going to be an old man. And a very old parent would find it somewhat challenging to raise a child. You get a little frustrated. You don't have the keach to run around after him when you're a little older. And Avram is concerned that if he gives birth at a relatively old age, he may not be able to accomplish his ultimate mission. His ultimate mission is not to have a child who will handle his financial affairs. That's not Avram's primary mission. What is his primary mission is to take over the legacy of what Avram stood for. The idea of a monotheistic God. That there is a God on this world to whom one is indebted to. That requires far more energy and far more interaction than simply taking care of his financial matters. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is assuring him, now let's read the Ramban, Ba'avur heyot lo habein hayoresh achar ziknato, on account of the fact that this child who will legally inherit him will be born when he is already ziknato, very, very old. Lo hifticho rak ahal yusha shelo yidak. The first thing that he told him was, lo yirash chazeh. This guy, Eliezer, will not inherit. What aspect did he expect Eliezer to inherit? If Avram had no children, what would you have expected Eliezer to inherit? Avram's legacy or his financial matters? Only his financial matters. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu first tells him, you know what? Lo yirash hazeh. The first thing is that which you thought Eliezer would serve as your continuum, that's not going to happen. That's number one that he tells him. Then he tells him a second time, ki im yetze, ki im ashe yetze miyimecha, hu yirashecha. The word yirashecha is used twice. Lo yirashcha zeh, this guy who you were worried about, Eliezer, will not be the person who inherits you, and that's only financial matters. But somebody who comes out from your family, you and Sarai together, will inherit you. What is that? That goes well above and beyond the financial matters. That is that it's going to be someone who you will be capable of transmitting all of your values and legacy to this child, and that child will succeed in perpetuating it even to a grandchild. Because in order for something to survive, passing it on to a child is never sufficient. It has to go at least one more generation. And that's why the Gemara always says, B'nei Banim, Harehem Kibanim. Grandchildren are considered like children. Not just because we spoil them like brats, our grandchildren, and we never turn them down, as opposed to our children, where we often say no. No, there's another reason. Because once a child is comfortable enough in transmitting your values to a child, to a grandchild of yours, then you see that it really has taken hold. And the Gemara, the Psukim, if you daven and you say Ashrei and followed by Yovalet Zion, Lo Yamushu Mipicha Umipi Zaracha Umipi Zera Zaracha. It's always three generations to succeed. So Avram is now being told nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about. Just one second. It's a little unusual that Avram should be so concerned at this age of his life that I'm going to be too old. How old? What is the age of Avram that we know in this parsha thus far? What is the age of Avram when we started at Parshas Lech Lecha? How old was he? 75. The Avram ben Shivim v'chamei shanim. It says that black and white in the text. Now, 75 was not terribly old to have a child. How do I know that? How do I know that 75... In fact, you were a spring chicken at 75. How do I know that? Because at the end of Noah, we have a list of children that are born. And the Torah only tells us one thing about the birth. Nothing. How old the father was when he had his first child. Then, Vayoled Bani, he had his first child and he called him Arpachshad. And then, what happens? He died. Vayoled Bani Mubana. He had lots of kids. And almost every one of them at the end of Noah, as opposed to the end of Bereshit. At the end of Bereshit, when we delineate, how old are those people when they're having their first child? 500 years old, 600 years old. At the end of Noah, we're a little more down to regular. It's about 100, 110, 120, some 130. So it's a little difficult to digest Ramban, who claims that right now, as Avram, who is only 75, what's he so worried about? Le'achar ziknato. He's not so old yet. After all, you don't require such a dramatic miracle. By nature, naturally, he could have given birth. So it's a little It's a little unusual, I must say. It is a little unusual.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Maybe he's worried about Sarah.
What?
It's Sarah.
Okay, so one would have to assume that all of those people at the end of Noah who got married when they were 110, 120, that their wives were not 20 years old. We would have to, unless they were Sephardim. Because that's a typical Spartan thing. You marry a guy, a lady marries somebody way older, so you can be in the. It's a little unusual. So he can take care of it. He's already well established in business. Yeah, that's why they do. Yeah. Not an age discrepancy of 100. It's usually about 10 to 15 years, which is their practice. Yeah. Who's that, Lot?
He's still alive.
That is correct. But Avram read Lot very well. In other words, answer the question, what does it mean he read him well? That when he decided to split, and where did he decide to go?
Stone.
To Stone, Avram, in effect, probably wrote him off. That's correct. It's a very good question, though. Why would Avram automatically focus his attention on his servant when he had a nephew, Lot?
But he went to war.
He went to war for, exactly. Now, if you just take a P, I'm not reading this pasuk yet, but I want you to look in terms of how. When did Avram succeed in having... How old was Avram? Because the Torah later tells us. Anybody remember how old he was? 100. Correct. It says it black and white in the text. However, in our psukim here, the Baal HaTurim, look on the top of the page of number one. I didn't bracket it, but it says the Baal HaTurim. It is the second line, where it says in a pasuk or two later, we'll read it in a couple of minutes, at the end of the pasuk it says, Ko Yihyeh Zarecha. So the simple pshat of the pasuk is, Ko Yihyeh Zarecha has to be understood in relationship to the beginning of the pasuk. What does the beginning of pasuk Hey say? He took Avram outside and he said, take a look at the stars. If you can count them, you will know how multiple your children will be. Obviously, you can't count them. So too, your children will multiply to such an extent that you will not be capable of counting them. Ko yihyeh zaracha. This is how your children will be. Like the multitude of what? Numbers of the sky. Very nice. Now take a look at the Baal HaTurim. Ko yihyeh zaracha. Perush kishiyeh lo od esrim v'chameh shanim. Because one of the favorite tools of the Baal HaTurim is gematrias. That's one of his tools that he uses to come up with interpretations. So shkeminyin ko yiyeh lo hazara. Shahare biberit ben habitarim haya Avram ben chamisha v'shivim shana. Avram, at this point during the brit ben habitarim, which we will learn about in great detail, Avram is only 75 years old. So God tells him, "Ko, in another 25 years, yira zarecha, you will have a child at that particular time." So it's a nice little cute device. It happens to be exactly true. Works out incredibly well for him. Yes?
Not so this is the right time, but having children, is that a bracha or is that a mitzvah? Is approval of food a mitzvah or is it a bracha?
It is both.
Okay.
It is both. Man's obligation is to try to have children. There is no guarantee. The bracha is that you will be succeed in being fruitful and multiply. In fact, the Rush in Masechet Ketubot challenges the Rambam Rambam writes that getting married is a mitzvah of the 613 mitzvot, to get engaged and get married. The Rosh says there is no such mitzvah to get married. None. The mitzvah is to have children. And theoretically, one can fulfill that mitzvah without getting married. You can live, the Ramban says, with a concubine, a pilegesh in the biblical Hebrew. And if you have children, you fulfill the mitzvah. So that's how it certainly is a mitzvah. No one denies that pruvu is a mitzvah. Yes?
But is it reasonable?
It's a little unusual to understand why it's not one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. Because it was given to to Adam and repeated to Noach. It's a little difficult to understand why a mitzvah like that is not considered one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach.
It's also a little bit out of our hands. Isn't a mitzvah supposed to be something that we can attain, that we can do when we do it? I can't, if I'm not getting married, I'm trying.
Correct? I hear what you say, but you said it so eloquently in your introduction. It is a bracha and a mitzvah. The mitzvah is that we have to try. The bracha is that you succeed when you try.
So is the mitzvah for men and women, or just men?
Believe it or not, it is one of the oddities of Jewish law. Women are not commanded to have a child. And the reason is, it's learned out from war. Why is it learned out from war? It's a good question. That a person, it says, after it says Puruvu, it says Uredu Ba'aretz V'Kivshuha. Have children and then go conquer the world. Who is obligated to conquer? Only men are obligated to participate in battle. And as a result, the Gemara compares Kibush to Puruvu. Et Shedar Kolich Bosh. Somebody's, it's a very unusual position. I'm telling you right now, I don't even mind being quoted. I didn't shut the tape recorder. It's an unusual position that Chazal feel that only the husband, the man, is obligated, is directly obligated, and not women. It's unusual, very unusual. Of the one mitzvah that I would think that women are equally or perhaps even more obligated, I would have said having children. Because even the comparison to war is not full-fledged. The only time that women are exempt from battle is for Milchemet Rashut, an optional war. But a Milchemet Mitzvah, nobody is exempt. Yeah?
No, I was just thinking that it could be that emotionally a woman definitely wants to have children.
Mm-hmm.
A man, maybe yes, maybe no. So for him, it's a mitzvah. It's an obligation. For her, it's her natural.
Interesting.
Journey.
Very. Are you a psychologist? No, but you might be right. You might be right. Yeah. Yeah.
Again, the fact that Puruvu is not with the Noah, but is relying also on the human condition. It didn't need to be a law because it happens anyway. When we rely on human condition, the human instinct to have children or to procreate, it'll happen. It didn't have to be commanded. As opposed to the other Noahide laws, where if we relied on man's instincts about murdering and stealing and Abram and Ahai and whatever else, we have to rein it in.
Interesting.
And control man's
okay.
Who's going to happen?
So why did then? It's a good point. Then why did the Torah legislate it as a mitzvah for us? Why is it one of the 613? Yes.
If the woman cannot conceive, is that the man has in faith?
Yes. The Gemara says that you're supposed to give her 10 years, and then after that you should try to get a second wife. So in the time of the Talmud, getting a second wife is not a problem because you don't have to divorce the first one. You can have multiple wives, so it's not a problem. After Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, in about the 11th century, early part of the 11th century, early part, end of the 10th, beginning of the 11th century, the Rabbeinu Gershom put a prohibition against polygamy. So that would require that you divorce the first wife and then look for a second wife, which has happened. But there have been great, great scholars and Talmidei Chachamim who have refused to do so. Lubavitcher Rebbe, Satmar Rebbe, even though Satmar Rebbe did have children from another wife, but they were all killed. Then when he married the second time, she never had children, Satmar Rebbe, and he didn't divorce her. So it's a little difficult. Who? Midrabanan. Yes. Midrabanan, not biblically, but Midrabanan, one does fulfill the obligation.
And if your children are killed, are you supposed to then replace them?
Yes. Because you only, it goes back to what I said a few minutes ago. You only fulfill the mitzvah of having a child if your children have a child. So that mitzvah hinges. Because the purpose is to perpetuate society. If your child does not perpetuate society, you didn't do much to perpetuate society. Let's take a look at the Bar Tanura, page number 2 for a minute. So let's, Bar Tanura, who was more known for his commentary on the Mishnah, he's one of the most famous commentaries on the Mishnah, and was the most famous commentator on the Mishnah until our day and age, where somebody who works for Bank Mizrahi replaced him. Kahati. You may have heard of the Kahati Mishnayos. So Rabbi Kahati, who was a banker by profession, wrote a commentary on all of Mishnah, which supplanted every previous commentary on the Mishnah. He is now the standard bearer. If you want to learn Mishnayos, you get a Kahati. He gives you all the background, everything that's necessary, far more inclusive than Bar Tanura, who was the previous. It's called the Rav, Rabbi Novatki Bar Tanura. His commentary was the one that always people used to use. As soon as Kahati came out, nobody buys the Bar Tanura anymore. That's that edition of the Mishnah. So it just shows you what we are capable of. I really believe that. That every student of mine can be the next Rabbi Notam. He can come up with something that is as great as anything that has ever been printed before, and that's proof to the pudding. So anyhow, Bar Tanura says, Vayomer Avram, Hein li lo nasata zera. This is Avram's initial remark leading up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's interjection. Vihine ben beiti yoreshoti. So he asks the question which we ask. Kasher. Shahare kvar amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu lizar acha etena ta'aretz. He already said in chapter 12, God promised Avram, I'm going to give you children and I'm going to give the land to your children. So what's he worried about? How's he now worried that his servant is going to inherit him? God told him it's going to be your child. V'yesh lomar, see, it's the standard answer. Shahaya mityarei shema yigrom hachet. He was afraid that perhaps he did something wrong, and that something wrong canceled out HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intended blessing. Kide itmar bibrachot, ukimo Yaakov, kide pirish Rashi beparshas vayishlach. Yaakov, when we learn vayishlach, expressed a very similar concern, that even though God had told him that I'm going to protect you, when he starts to confront Esav, he is worried that what happened, he may have done something wrong, and that negated HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise. Od yesh lomar, dehachi ka'amar, ani zakanti, I'm already old, v'li lo natata zera, adaya. Va'af im titen li le'atid, kasher hiftakani, even if you fulfill your promise and give it to me directly, I have a child. Kisha amut, when I die, yisha'er bini katan v'rach. If I'm going to have a baby when I'm an old man, so what happens if I die after my kid's 5 years old? So who's ultimately going to take control of everything that I own? Still Ben Meshek Beisi. Exactly. Yavo Ben Beiti V'yigbar Alav. He will overpower him. V'yitolet Shalo. And he'll take everything for him. Lochein Hivticho. Therefore, God reassures him. Lo Yirashcha Zeh. Ki im asher yetzei mimeyecha hu yirashcha kilomar hu yigdal b'chayecha. He will mature during your lifetime. V'yachzik b'shelcha, and he will take hold of everything that you possess. Hu v'lo acher, him and nobody else. V'chein ata motzei, you will notice shahaya Yitzchak Ben Ayin Hey Shana B'mot Aviv. Yitzchak did not die. Avram did not die until Yitzchak was 75 years old. So says the Bar Tanura, Avraham's concern has been allayed and promised by God two things. Number one, it's going to be your family. Number two, your concern that you're not going to have a chance to raise him is not going to be realized. You will spend full 75 years, which is more than adequate time, to enable you to transmit your inheritance up to him. Take a look at Rabbeinu Bachya, page number 3. And he starts, but he's going to say something a little unusual. Avram's concern was, ain, I bracketed on the top of the page, v'ein yotzei v'ein ba b'beiti, nobody comes out of my house, nobody leaves my house, nobody comes in. Zulati ish nachri, the only one who's in my house is a stranger, shelokachti midamesek, who I purchased in the city of Damascus, who is lo mi beit avi, who is not from my family, velo me artzi, he's not even enough to what? To qualify, he's not from my homeland. And homeland happened to have been something that Avraham was very concerned with. Not only family, but from his homeland. How do I know that? How did Bachya know that that was a concern? Does it? Yeah? Exactly. Because in chapter 24, after the Torah states, V'Avraham Zakein, Baba Yamin, V'Hashem Beirachet Avraham Bakol, what's the next thing that unfolds? Oh, I got to find a wife for Yitzchak. And he sends, of all people, Eliezer. And what instructions does he give? Lokachas isha miwak mibeit avi umeeretz molandati. So there was something there, namely, and this supports the notion which Chazal have adopted. It's not in the Torah text. Something that we refer to at the end of Parshat Noah. According to many, Terach already became a Baal Tshuva at the end of his life. He was an idolater. According to the Midrash, again, the Torah gives no background to Avram before he's introduced on the scene. Avram took his idols and destroyed all of them. And there were two reactions recorded in the Midrash. One set of Midrashim is the one that all your kids learn. What did Terach do to Avram after he destroyed his idols? His father, handed him over to Nimrod. And what did Nimrod do with him? Threw him into the cauldron. Exactly. And he escaped unscathed. But it was under those circumstances, Terach never changed. He continued to believe in idols his entire life. That's one strain of the Midrash. And that's the predominant view, and that's why our kids in the third grade, whatever grade they're learning, second grade, you get your Chumash, Tekes HaChumash, and they start with Lech Lecha, very nice, and that's the way they learn. Terach, bad dude. However, the other strain of the Midrash is Terach ultimately reformed. And that was supported by Ramban, who noticed that the initial trek from Ur Kasdim was not initiated by God's command to Avraham. But what did the Torah say in the second to the left? Vayikach Terach. Correct. Well, that's the Eretz Kanan. He just didn't get there. He died in Haran. But it was Terach. Why is suddenly Terach leaving Ur Kasdim, planning to make his way to Eretz Kanan? Because he did Tshuva. So assuming that that Bachya here is assuming that that tack is correct, that Terach did Tshuva, and as a result he was not the only one to have somehow bought into Avram's message. There were lots of people in Ur Kasdim, their homeland, who accepted that that philosophy. Especially, even if you wanted to combine the two stories, when they saw that Avram was thrown into the Kivshan HaEsh and he escaped unharmed, that made an impression on a lot of people. So Avram, when he tells Eliezer, I want you to get a wife, I prefer that you get it from whom? My family. But if you can't get it from my family, lechol ha-pachot, what should you do? Get it from Eretz Moladati. Because there might be people there who I can relate to. So therefore, Bachya says that right here and now, that Avram is concerned that Eliezer is lo mi beit avi velo me artzi. So that is part of a continuous train of thought according to one group of Midrashim. V'oz pi reish lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu hashtayim sheromat. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu explicitly told him two things that he had previously guaranteed. Number one, Haftachat Olam Azeh, Hu She'amar Lo Yirashcha Zeh Ki Im Asher Yetzei Mimeecha. He will not what? Inherit you. He, Eliezer, will not, but rather someone of your own child. And Haftachat Olam Haba Mima She'amar He Hu Yirashcha. He will inherit you. Ki hu shemo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word hu is the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She'ata tihiyeh Yerushato. You will be God's inheritance. And he cites the pasuk, which we recite 50,000 times during the high holiday season, after we recite the end of the Shlosh Esri Midot. What do we say? Terach Arach Hamem Chesed Yemes. No Tzechesed La'alafim L'Asem Yoresh HaChatov V'Nakei V'Salachta La'avoneinu U'Lechatoseinu U'Nichaltanu. We ask God to be our inheritor. So a person, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu inherits you, what does it guarantee for you? What does it guarantee you for you? Olam Haba. That is Olam Haba. So Bachya claims that HaKadosh Baruch, when he says Yirashcha twice, that the one who will inherit you is going to be Ki'im, not Lo Yishcha Zeh, Eliezer's not, but rather some, that's Olam Hazeh. The next two words, and the last two words of the pasuk, Hu Yirashcha, that refers to God's Olam Haba. Olam Haba. And I suggest that you can combine both of these. It's very difficult to understand what the concept of Olam Haba is really. Really, it's obviously very difficult. Unfortunately, ISIS, these guys think that they know. That guy yesterday who drove, he did it because he knew he was promised. They say he followed the ISIS playbook to the T. That's what everybody says. There's an ISIS playbook, how to kill people. He followed it to the T. They said he's been planning this for months already. So they think they know it's an Olam Haba. Fine. On a practical level that we can understand, Olam Haba means that if a person has lived their life in a manner which is in harmony with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your legacy will live on through your children. That's Olam Haba.
That's Olam Haba in this world.
Correct.
If you see a piece of yourself.
Correct. And that's what I think Bhaktiya is really alluding to. That's what I think he's alluding to. In the context of children, we see what Olam Haba really is. So you don't have to worry about it. You'll get Olam Haba means that you'll be blessed to have children who will be willing to continue along your line. And that's something that Bachi is emphasizing through the second time it says Hu Yirashcha. Turn to the page number 4 for a minute. Yes? Yes? Because when we get over there, everybody's going to say Eliezer's a different kind of guy. He indeed absorbed everything that Avram stood for. In fact, some go so far. There's a Midrash that says, as you well know, according to the Midrash, the reason why Lavan is the one who is handling all of the decisions about Rivka and not her father Besuel. So what does the Midrash say? Whatever happened to Besuel? He died. And how did the Midrash say he died? He was poisoned. Poisoned. Now, some Midrashim actually say that Eliezer was the one who put the poison, because he wanted that Avram should be forced to marry Yitzchak to his daughter. Correct. He wanted Rivka to be poisoned. That was his plan. And an angel came and switched the plates. That's according to one Medrash. Eliezer. Because Eliezer wanted that Avram should find no one who was suitable and worthy to marry his daughter, his son. And then by process of elimination, there'd be no one else. So Eliezer would say, I have a daughter. Why don't you marry Yitzchak to my daughter? That's what he wanted. In which case, he's a little rogue, but on the other hand, he felt that, you know, I lived my life in Avram's household and I emulated his example. He wouldn't be so, you know, in opposition to doing that.
But,
I have no idea. No idea. That's like lots of stories in the Midrash. I know. There's no basis in the text whatsoever. Sometimes there's a basis in the text. Yeah, I know. I don't know. Now, the Shibale Haleket is a Rishon. In his commentary here, it's focusing on the Sigur. So if you daven Mincha on Shabbos, you'll remember in the fourth bracha of Shmon Esrei, the bracha of Kedushat Hayom for Mincha, we describe the day of Shabbos. Avraham Yagel, Yitzchak Yiranein, Yaakov Uvanav, Yanuchu Bo. So he is trying to explain why Avram is described in terms of Gila, and Yitzchak is Rina, and Yaakov is Menucha. That's what his long essay on this page is all about. I am not going to be interested in what's happening with Yitzchak and Yaakov, but I am interested in his remark about Avraham. And let's read it. I bracketed it for you. The line before I bracketed says that Gil Yagil Avi Yitzchak Avi Tzadik Ze Avraham, that Yagil is Avraham. Bishah Shenit Baser, when Avraham was informed, Lo Yirashcha Ze, that Eliezer will not inherit you, Ki Im Asher Yetze Mimeecha Hu Yirashcha, Ba Simcha Vigila Bilibo. Avraham was incredibly happy. Incredibly happy. Shine Emar, as the Pasuk says later on, Vayipol Avraham Alpanav. Avraham fell down on his face. What is the expression of falling on his face mean? Not that he tripped, but he prostrated himself to say something unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Shibalei Aleket, Shahaya Sameach Ve'olaz Bilibo Al Sheheftichu HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'asot Lo Neis Kazeh. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him that this miracle would occur. Nonetheless, therefore, we say every single Shabbat, Avraham Yagel. So when you daven Mincha, he wants you to think of this. Why are we describing Avraham as Gila? Based on the fact that he rejoiced profusely when he heard this particular message. Lo yirashcha zeh, ki im asher yetze mimeecha, hu yirashcha. So says the Shibalei Aleket. The question which you have to think about, if this is correct, why is it included in Tfilat Mincha of Shabbat afternoon? Why is it included? So the Rav once commented on something that Birnbaum seriously objected to. If you look at the Birnbaum Siddur, and years ago, before Otzwa was ever invented, anybody who had a Siddur that needed English translation, if you went into a shtiebel, they certainly didn't have the Birnbaum Siddur. They used the Tikkun Meir Siddur and various others. But if you davened in a shul, typically it was the Birnbaum Siddur. So Birnbaum has a note in his Siddur that he saw in a lot of Siddurim that the conclusion of the bracha, of the bracha of Shabbos, switches from Maariv to Shacharis to Mincha at its very end. On Friday night you say V'yonuchu Va Yisrael Mekadosh Shemecha Baruch Ato Hashem Mekadosh Shabbos. Shabbos morning you say V'yonuchu Vo Yisrael Mekadosh Shemecha, and at Mincha we say V'yonuchu Vam Yisrael Mekadosh Shemecha. So Birnbaum writes that it's a big mistake. It should be V'yanuchu Va all the time. Because what is it referring to? The Shabbos. Shabbos is Nekeva. So V'yanuchu Va. Yisrael Mekadesh Yeshemecha Yanuchu Ba. The Jews who sanctify your name will be rejoicing with in her, with her, on or resting. V'yanuchu Va, we're resting on that day. So from a grammatical point, Birnbaum's 100% right. However, one second, the Rav said that he forgot or wasn't aware of a famous piece of Zohar. The Zohar writes that the Friday night is commemorative of Zuchra, the male, the female, the male. Shabbat morning is Nukva, the Nekeva. And Shabbos afternoon is the merger of Zachar and Nekeva. Whatever that means. So there is no doubt that the authors of the Tefillah are reflecting the Zohar's thought. There's no doubt about it. And therefore it's Friday night is V'yanuchu Va, V'yanuchu Vo on Shabbat morning, or it's the reverse. The woman is at night, the man is during the day, and then the combination is by Mincha V'yanuchu Va. And what it really is supposed to develop is that the Shabbat is supposed to be reflective, as we say in benching, that harachaman hu yanchileinu liyom shikulo tov uminucha l'chaye ha'olamim. Shabbos is supposed to be reflecting in a tiny image of what type of ultimate menucha in the chaye ha'olamim, in the world to come. So the Zohar is in effect the basis of Bachya's Kama. What is the real Olam, or Chaye HaOlamim, where you take the mother, you take the father, and they live together, and what happens? They produce a child. That is the Vayanuchuvam. That's the ultimate Olam Haba. And therefore, the Shibale Halakha says that when it says Avraham Yagel, what is Avraham rejoicing about? What aspect of his life is he rejoicing about? The fact that he is now being told, I am going to have a child with whom? With Sarah. And that's why the conclusion of the tefillah at Mincha is V'yanuchu Vom. That's the real Minucha L'chaye HaOlamim. So that which I said 2 weeks ago, that which is in Bachya, really has its origins in the Zohar, which Shibale Haleket is relying on, and that's why he claims that the phrase Avram Yagel could refer to 60,000 things in his life. I would have said, you know what's Avram Yagel? When the angel said, don't touch Yitzchak. That would have been, you know, maybe if I had to look for an event in which Avram would be rejoicing, that would be the greatest moment for Israel. But that's not what he says. He says it's this particular moment. And I think it's related to that Zohar, and indeed in the Art Scroll and most other Siddurim, the old-fashioned Siddurim, the Tikkun Meir, it says Ba for Friday night, Vo for Shabbat, and Bam for Mincha. Berenbaum, he's wrong. Yeah.
Is this why when a baby is born before the bris that you bring some children together to sing Avraham Yagel?
Yes, mm-hmm. That is correct. That's the basis of the minhag. Yes, Avraham, that's what they sing in many communities. Correct. That's exact. They got it from the Shibale Halakha. Because this is a commentary on the Siddur, this piece which he's written here. Good. Okay, we'll stop here and we will continue next Avach.